This honorable court is again in session. Be seated, please.
Thank you all very much for your exceptional patience with us today. There were a few provisions we want to talk about a little bit, either you wanted to or we wanted to talk about a little more detail, perhaps. I would like to ask counsel, after this part of the hearing is over, to confer, whoever you need to confer to determine whether anything actually discussed here needs to remain sealed. I'm not sure why paragraph 60 is sealed, in the hopes that we could unseal this transcript going forward, or as much of it as possible, in the interests of transparency for the public. Okay. The government like to start, and so my question about paragraph 60 obviously is that a different stipulation of fact than the one they agree to enter into in six? Are there multiple stipulations of fact? Because there's the stipulation of fact that's attached as addendum A, and then this one clearly sounds like it's going to be written later.
Yes, these are different stipulations of fact. The stipulation of fact that was about attachment A was about admissions related to planning the attacks on 9/11, and as I understand it, certain jurisdictional facts that brought them within the definition of unprivileged enemy belligerent. Mm-hmm. The stipulation of fact referred to in paragraph 60 is a different stipulation of fact regarding the background circumstances and consequences of the accused detention since 2003. I don't believe that there is any contention, and my understanding from talking with my colleagues who are part of the prosecution is that there was no action or performance on this paragraph between July 31st and August 2nd.
I'm sure that's because this is later in time. I was just trying to understand if this had any relevance to the agreement to enter into a stipulation of fact.
Short answer is no, Your Honor. Okay. I think there was my only other comment that I noted in rebuttal, the citations I read to the court are related to paragraph 57 about the scheduling issues. Mm-hmm. And I think I was able to give my response fully based on the public record, but if the court has any more questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Okay. And do you have a view on what the meaning of paragraph 5 is, where the accused agrees to waive his rights and offers to plead guilty? What is in waive his rights?
It means that at the plea colloquy or at the Providence inquiry, as evidenced here by the offers to plead guilty, he will plead guilty and waive all further rights at that colloquy. I don't think that he has waived any rights by actions or inactions between July 31st and August 2nd. As we discussed, the judge made clear that if their decision to not question the witness on August 1st, if for any reason this deal didn't go forward, and of course there were many reasons this deal might not have gone forward, the judge might not have accepted it, there might have been a disagreement about a material term, that they would then be allowed to come back and question that witness if they had any need to. So the waiver of rights and the offer to plead guilty happens later. It happens at the plea colloquy or the equivalent thereof.
How do we know that? Because I'm understanding and reading from them, and they'll respond if I've got this wrong, that this actually kicked in upon the signing of the agreement, their obligation to waive, as in not exercise rights, waive rights at hearings, not question.
I think a waiver of right is usually not something you can take back. You're waiving it, you're foregoing it, and that happens at the moment you plead guilty, and that's why it's paired in the sentence with offers to plead guilty.
Any questions on that?
What's the difference between the first sentence and paragraph 23 then?
Turn to it, Your Honor. I think there it's a more specific promise to waive all waivable motions. You could imagine that someone would say, oh, you don't need to separately waive a motion if you've waived the underlying right. But I think that this paragraph is making clear that that is the moment at which any motion you have out there or any future motion you want to make about rights you've waived is no longer on the table.
And all right, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. There are no further questions.
And do you have thoughts on C7 or 5?
So specifically, before when I was referencing paragraph 5, it does say the accused agrees to waive his rights and offers to plead guilty. I don't understand, you know, the government is reading words into the text to say agrees to waive his rights at his plea agreement. I just don't read it that way. This is a very.
It doesn't say the accused waives his rights. This is a forward, agrees to do something at some other time.
Precisely.
Rather than, it would just say accused waives his rights if it was operative right away, wouldn't it?
I 100% agree. And he agrees to waive his rights moving forward once the agreement is accepted, which is.
It doesn't say that. It says he agrees to waive rather than. I'm asking, the agrees to seems to make it for a future event rather than something that happens upon the signing of the agreement.
Well, I think it's a forward-looking promise, to use my friend's formulation. And so by not asserting rights, by actively refraining, by stating on the record that we are refraining from questioning witnesses, that is a waiver of right.
Show us where,
I'm sorry,
you're going to show us where Mr. Muhammad or Mr. Hatsawa made those statements.
To be sure. So again,
however, the government made those statements.
I'm sorry. So with the JA number, I just wanted to correct what I had said before. I think I said 233. I meant to say JA224 is where the government explains its interpretation of the pretrial agreement, where it says, at this point, with the waiver of all motions from the three of the accused, they can't actively continue to participate, et cetera, et cetera. Moving to Mr. Ruiz's statements, we have begun performance. We are not going to question this witness. I'm paraphrasing somewhat, but that it, we deem that to be specific performance to be binding. This is certainly acting on an agreement to waive a known right. This is a witness whose testimony had spanned, who had begun the day before, and for which Mr. Hassawi.
Just so I'm clear, yeah. What page are you talking about with Mr. Ruiz's?
Mr. Ruiz's statement is on page 237, JA 237. And
Mr. Muhammad,
we are abstaining from that, engaging examination of the witness. We are abstaining from that, and we believe that is specific performance on the plea agreement. And again, this is responding to Mr. Trivett's concerns that there might be the political blowback, frankly, that we saw. If that were somehow to revoked, removed, it would be a breach of the agreement as it stands right now. Mr. McCall says, sure, the government obviously does not object to that. And then we did speak about Mr. Soward's remarks at a page.
Those were much later.
That was post, correct. But it was reiterating the earlier understanding. We could probably get record sites that aren't in the JA, if that would be helpful. For Mr. Muhammad.
Josh making similar statements?
I can't represent that to the court because I don't have the transcript in front, but we will file a 28J with whatever we find on that score from the August 1st hearing.
From the August 1st,
if that would be helpful. Yeah. If that would be helpful to the court.
Do you agree with the government's reading of 60?
If you give me a moment. That it is a second stipulation of fact?
No, yeah, 60. Yeah. The conference of stipulation of fact.
Concerning the accused detention since 2003. Yes, that is a forward looking promise.
Okay. The prior references to stipulation of fact don't include both addendum A and this one. They only include addendum A.
That's correct. So the as I understand it, and I will be tackled to the ground, this is a term that is also specific to Mr. Muhammad's agreement, but is a essentially a stipulation of fact, as I understand it, and again, tackled me to the ground, dealing with his detention in the black sites by the Central Intelligence Agency. And so the government wanted to essentially get a stipulated statement of facts, both for primarily for national security purposes. So that's what that's what that's looking forward to. Okay. Right. So certainly in combination with other
parts. And then their argument about, by the way, again, if we can know whether 60, 57, and 5 have to remain sealed, it seems important.
Yep. It's
paragraph 57. Did Mr. Muhammad or Mr. Al-Hazawi, and then counsel can talk about Mr. Bin Attash, did they, is there transcript sites where they asked that they joined in asking the military commission to, you know, step on the gas on scheduling these hearings?
This was a joint request made by the government pursuant to this term. They certainly did not object, and I believe Colonel McCall.
Did he say it was a joint request? I'm just trying to. They made a point about them not making this request for expedition, but if you're saying that somewhere where he said this is a joint, I'm speaking for everybody.
I will have to get back to you just on a specific record site in terms of just identifying if and when the parties agreed or consented to that representation by the government. Our understanding and our operation has been that was a joint statement of reflecting paragraph 57. The defense certainly joined in on that, and the colloquies that follow all support the get everything scheduled by Wednesday. And I know Mr. Soward's talked about that. I just don't know that it's in the joint appendix, and I don't want to mislead the court by accident.
That's absolutely fine. And then just again, because this is a sealed proceeding, we're going to trust attorneys to follow up without us having to issue an order. Otherwise, we have to do like a sealed order. And that's just less and less transparency for the public.
Absolutely. Okay. And we have no objection to the unsealing of any of the parts.
I see that you want to make a comment, but I first want to let Mr. Bin Attash ask any questions.
Thank you.
This will be very brief, Your Honor. I don't have any closed argument to make. I just wanted to say to the court that I do have some concern about some sort of basic timeline things that I might have been able to clear up that I didn't, in terms of like when the witness testified, when documents were signed, those sorts of things. I'm not trying to get outside of what we're supposed to be doing in closed session. I just wanted to say that I had hoped to do more of that when I was at the podium and I didn't. So if there's anything I can do to be helpful to the court, I just wanted to express that.
You don't have any views and on the paragraphs we've talked about?
I don't have anything to add on the particular paragraphs. No, we're not relying on those paragraphs.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, one minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just want to make sure that I have the order of operations for things that I want to submit to the court. Mm-hmm. Things I have said I will submit to the court, potentially under seal, are the signed stipulations for each of the respondents and the three citations that I read to the court during my rebuttal. I suspect we are not going to reach an agreement to unseal the stipulations. So unless the court objects, I'm going to file them under seal today. Mm-hmm. The three remaining citations I listed, I may be able to file them publicly, but if we can't reach agreement on that, because they're not technically sealed, they're just not cleared, would the court prefer that I file them sooner under seal or wait a few days and then file them publicly?
Is a few days really just a few days?
I hope so, Your Honor. I can do whatever is most convenient to the court, whether I file them promptly and under seal and then try to get them unsealed as quickly as possible or wait a little bit.
I think if there are already going to be other things that may be unsealed, maybe just file everything promptly.
Oh, file everything promptly. Okay.
But please press forward so that if you can then file it publicly by the end of the week or something or early next week, that would be valuable.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And then just to
go on both fronts. We want it both. We want it all.
I understand. And then the final question I had was, I took Judge Millett your instruction to try to unseal as much as possible of the paragraphs that were discussed in closed session today. I think since we have not discussed the specifics of things like the stipulations or the sentences, I am hopeful that we can go ahead and get an agreement and get the military commission. We can certainly ask him to unseal. I just wanted to clarify that's going to come separately from the things that I will get to you under seal today.
No, I know that will take a little bit of time, but
we will try. We'll do our very best.
Certainly some unsealing of some paragraphs, and quite frankly, again, these are the ones we've talked about, so it's important.
I understand.
But it seems like an awful lot of this I understand about the sentences, mm-hmm. but I understand there's a lot of other language on here that that's blacked out from the public that I'm not sure why is sealed.
Right. And as soon as.
So maybe worth a healthy second look, but the one we talked about today so we could unseal this transcript are most pressing.
Right. And as we are concerned about violating a lower tribunal seal at under Rule 47.1. So we just want to make sure we go through the Absolutely. Military judge.
And we're not asking you not to do, okay. to do that at all.
Thank you. Thank you for the clarification, Your Honor.
All right. With that, the case is submitted. We're incredibly grateful to all the attorneys for your extended arguments and fast work on this. It's really important and helpful to me, at least, I'm sure to my colleagues. For our deliberations in this case. So we're incredibly grateful and we're sorry for having taken over most of your day. The case is submitted.